This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Hillary Clinton paid a visit to Cincinnati earlier this week with a fundraiser on Sunday and a campaign event with Senator Elizabeth Warren at the Museum Center on Monday. Donald Trump scheduled to be in Cincinnati for a fundraiser next Wednesday. With both party conventions just a few weeks away, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us to analyze the presidential campaigns. You can join the conversation this afternoon at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
It's great to be here.
So we'll get to the latest news in politics, but first, Ken, let's start with a trivia question. What have you got for us this afternoon?
Well, it's not a Cincinnati trivia question. It's a Cleveland trivia question, but I think that still works.
Yeah, sure.
It's both kind of in the same state. But, of course, you know, Cleveland Cavaliers are the NBA champions, and a very exciting seven-game series. Mm-hmm. And it ended a long drought, of course, for Cleveland professional teams. So my question is, who was the vice president the last time a Cleveland professional sports team, and I'm talking about baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, the last time a Cleveland sports team won a championship?
A pro sports team, yeah.
In those sports, right.
Okay.
Who's the vice president the last time a team won it?
I gotcha. Mm.
So if you know the answer to that, or even if you think you just might know the answer, give us a call, 513-419-7100. And phone calls only, please. No emails for the trivia question. And the first correct answer wins a political junkie button. 513-419-7100. So, Ken and Howard, I wonder what your thoughts are, what your take is on the appearance by Elizabeth Warren with Hillary Clinton in Cincinnati during the week.
Howard, you want to go first?
Well, I thought it was extraordinary because she came in here and, obviously she didn't endorse Hillary Clinton until the nomination had been clinched. She is the type of Democrat who appeals to the Bernie Sanders crowd quite a bit. I mean, she and Hillary Clinton have not always been on the same page. But if you listen to them make their back-to-back speeches Monday at the Museum Center, they were almost echoing each other. I mean, first of all, first half was Trump bashing, a whole lot of that. And the second part of it was Hillary Clinton sounding like
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. On issues like trade and, Wall Street taking advantage of little people.
She struck a much more populist tone.
Yeah, and it was very, very odd to hear, that coming out of Hillary Clinton's mouth. But she had Elizabeth Warren next to her, and I think there's going to be, whether or not she's going to be the vice presidential running mate, I don't know. I have my doubts, but Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton are probably going to do many more of these joint events.
I thought it was very, very exciting. I love this time of year where it's vice presidential speculation.
Right.
I know that John Glenn went through that so many times, both with Jimmy Carter and I guess again with perhaps Dukakis. Carter and then Dukakis. I mean, basically, it's not so much a tease, but everybody loves to see the two of them. And, of course, everybody says, well, could two women run together on the same ticket? Well, I looked it up right before the show. I saw that in many times two men have run together on the same ticket.
Yeah.
That's been always. Almost always, except for twice. But anyway, I thought it was exciting. I think that, I wasn't surprised to hear Hillary Clinton sound like Elizabeth Warren, because since Bernie Sanders made a difference in this campaign, Hillary Clinton has sounded more of that progressive left than she has in the past. But having said that, yes, there did seem to be a good chemistry with the two of them campaigning. And Howard, you're absolutely right. In the past, they have not had that kind of chemistry. But having said that, I just wonder if Hillary Clinton if Hillary Clinton's inclination is really now that Bernie Sanders, or once Bernie Sanders goes away quietly, he'll give his perfunctory endorsement, he'll get some things at the convention, and then the Clinton people say thank you very much, then her natural inclination, I think, is to move more to the center to get all those disaffected Republicans out there who despise Donald Trump, and there are quite a few of those. So I kind of think that Elizabeth Warren is not the kind of candidate or the person that Hillary Clinton would want as her ticket mate.
And that leads to this other person that's being speculated about is Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia.
Yes, I mean, he's on the list. He's not Mr. Excitement.
No.
But
he's safe.
He's safe. You know something? My prediction is still Sherrod Brown.
Darn.
I mean, let me just give you a little bit of history of my vice presidential picks. I did pick Tom Eagleton in 72. I picked Dan Quayle in 88. And I picked John Edwards in 2004. And in every other instance, I was wrong every other time. So, yeah. I mean, I just never.
Well, I won a bet in 1988 in New Orleans with the other Ohio reporters by picking Dan Quayle.
Yeah, me too. I did. I thought so too. I thought that Bush needed somebody from the Midwest, but he wasn't going to go to Bob Dole.
Somebody would be completely dependent upon him because the Bush has demanded loyalty.
Yeah, and you know something, I mean, just like Sarah Palin before she was picked by John McCain, Sarah Palin was a pretty solid governor with very positive approval ratings in Alaska. Dan Quayle was considered a good Republican senator, a good conservative who worked well with Democrats. And then, of course, he, like Sarah Palin, became caricatures. But I don't know if that's the media's fault or their fault or a combination of it. But Dan Quayle certainly made sense.
Yeah.
This time, I think Sherrod Brown is my pick for that reason. I think
so.
Sherrod
Ken, I'm
Brown,
curious what does he bring? What do you see him?
Sherrod Brown?
Yeah.
Well, Sherrod Brown does bring that economic inequality argument that Bernie Sanders does. He does bring the questions about income inequality and questions about trade that Bernie Sanders supporters likes. I think that his chemistry with Hillary Clinton looked very good. Just with Tim Kaine, as Virginia is important, I think Ohio is very important. Yes, a lot of people say, well, if they win, then John Kasich gets to name another senator. Well, look, if Hillary Clinton wins, then maybe they win the Senate anyway. So who knows? Because there are a lot of Republicans, the Kelly Ayotte and the Mark Kirks and the Ron Johnsons, who are very, very vulnerable. So I think that the fear of losing a Democratic Senate seat in Ohio is overblown. I still think it's Sherrod Brown.
Well, I mean, the Ohio factor is probably your best argument, I think, too, because he's pretty popular in Ohio right now.
Yeah, he is. He is. It's interesting.
Especially and he could motivate Democrats to get out and work for this ticket.
Yeah, Tim Kaine is not, again, he's not Mr. Charisma.
No.
I mean, you don't want somebody upstaging the ticket, but I kind of think that just the combination of Hillary Clinton, who's more reserved, and a more energetic Sherrod Brown, just seems to make more sense to me.
Yeah, Sherrod would not get in her way. He would not try to upstage her.
And you wonder about that with Elizabeth Warren, because Elizabeth Warren, look, she's a combative Democrat to stand up to Donald Trump. She apparently gets under his skin. I mean,
yeah. She gives a great speech.
She gave a great speech Monday. I mean, it was terrific. She just filleted him.
All his Pocahontas remarks, I think, just shows that she is getting under his skin. But look, anybody who looks at him cross-eyed gets under his skin, so I don't know about that. Look, I think she's on the list. I think she will be vetted and should be vetted. I think it would be amazingly exciting if she were the nominee. I mean, to have two women, to have one woman topping the ticket is historic. Mm-hmm. To have two women on the ticket is even more. It's historic-er. I think, is that the right word?
Yes.
It's historic-er, yeah.
That's good. That's a hysterical word. Yes.
Very hysterical.
No, you're right. But if she's not chosen, does she follow through and go out and make those kind of stump speeches for Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely. And remember, I remember in the 2014 elections, there were a lot of Democrats in the South or the border states, mm-hmm. Allison Lundgren Grimes, for example, in Kentucky, where they certainly didn't want Obama campaigning for her, but they had Elizabeth Warren come down. Elizabeth Warren came down for several states in the border states in the South because she just is very popular with the populist wing, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party.
So, Ken, what about on Trump's side? Who do you see on the list there?
I'm convinced he picks Donald Trump. I'm convinced he picks himself because it can't be Corey Lee Wendowski because he has a non-compete clause. Actually, is there a difference from going from the Trump campaign to CNN? I mean, they've both done everything they can to promote Donald Trump as candidate. You know, that's tougher with Donald Trump because he's so unorthodox that you don't think he'll do a conventional, you know, Jeff Sessions of Alabama or Newt Gingrich or something, but. And then I see a lot of other names being thrown out there lately. Joni Ernst, the senator from Iowa, John Thune, the senator from South Dakota. But I think John Thune needs much more a time in the U.S. Senate. I think it would be much too soon to have him named. That is the stupidest joke I've ever used.
Well, you know, the one I heard that I find compelling is Mark Cuban's name. Keeps popping up in these strange settings.
I think I saw Cuban saying that he would take VP for either
one of them. Yeah.
You know, that's great. It's like,
but he's also, he's also trashed Trump several times.
And so is Newt Gingrich, who's on the list, that Trump's comments about the federal judge hearing the Trump University case, he said that was just outright bigotry and racism. So, you know,
the thing with Trump and the vice presidency, I'm not sure, you know, that it matters as much in his case because, you know, what's he trying to do? I mean, you know, he's the dominant figure on that ticket, and he's not likely to get anybody who's going to win him a battleground state.
Yeah, you know something? I agree with you completely. I remember when Lee Wendowski was fired, everybody says, oh, no, who's going to be the new campaign manager? The campaign manager has always been Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, exactly.
Yeah. All right. What about Chris Christie?
Well, he certainly wouldn't bring New Jersey. His numbers are very, very low in New Jersey and sinking. Chris Christie did get a lot of criticism for those press conferences where he just seemed to be staring into the netherworld. But Chris Christie is on the list. He's a good campaigner. He's won twice in a blue state, blue state. His fortunes, political fortunes, are not as good, but he really has nowhere else to go. He's term limited. He can't run for re-election in 2017. Isn't it sad that the only thing he has left is to be vice president?
Yeah.
He's definitely on that list.
Yes. If he wants to stay in politics, that's about it for him.
And who was the last person with his initials to be vice president?
Calvin Coolidge.
That's correct.
Wow. I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. We will continue our conversation.
It's not that impressive.
It is to me. We'll continue our conversation.
You thought it was Kim Kardashian, didn't you?
Yeah, you're right. We'll continue our conversation and see if we can find somebody who has the correct answer to Ken's trivia question. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us this afternoon. And you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, we have some folks lined up to try their hand at the trivia question.
Yes, lots of them.
Lots of them. So give us the question again before we start looking at who has the right answer.
Okay, before the Cleveland Cavaliers, who was the vice president the last time a Cleveland professional sports team, and I'm talking about baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, the last time a Cleveland sports team won a championship? Who's the vice president?
Okay, let's see if Larry in Milford knows the answer.
Shoot. We'll try Ford. How's that?
Gerald Ford is not the correct answer.
Okay, let's see if Chuck and Amberly knows the right answer.
Dick Nixon.
Richard Nixon was a two-term vice president, but never is not the correct answer when the last time Cleveland won a championship.
Okay. Mike and Clifton, what do you think the answer is?
I'm going to just throw it out there. Alvin Barkley.
Alvin Barkley was vice president in the early 1950s mm-hmm. under Harry Truman, but it's not Alvin Barkley.
This is your...
Okay. Ellen in Sailor Park. Ellen, who do you think the answer is?
I think it's Lyndon Johnson.
Well, Lyndon Johnson was also vice president. Not the correct answer.
Got some interesting answers, though, so far, Ken.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I haven't heard Calvin Coolidge yet.
Yeah.
Or Kim Kardashian.
That would be my pick. Let's see if Beth in Western Hills knows the answer. Beth?
Hi. Yeah, there wasn't one.
Okay.
Wait, Beth is saying
there
was no. Is Beth saying there was no vice president?
She said none. Right. Yeah, she said there wasn't. There wasn't one.
Right. What well, said. Beth is correct.
Yes.
Hey.
Way to go, Beth. Good job.
Good job, Beth. Congratulations.
As soon as Beth gets her voice back, let me just remind everybody that there was no vice president because in 1963, when President Kennedy was assassinated, Lyndon Johnson moved up to be vice president. And because there was no mechanism that allowed the choosing of a vice president in terms of a vacancy, because there was no 25th
correct.
Amendment back then, there was no vice president throughout 1964. Hubert Humphrey became vice president with the inauguration of 65. Beth is correct.
Yes. And Beth, stay on the line so we can get your address. We're to send your prize to it. Again, congratulations. 513-4-
Wait. Can we just hear?
Please make
can we
note.
Just hear? Can we hear Beth's voice? Because that was. Yeah. I just need to hear what Beth sounds like. Beth,
you still there, Beth?
I am still here.
Sorry. Okay, that's
Beth. Beth,
okay.
don't pay any
you
attention.
You did a great
to him.
Job.
None of us do. Thank you, Beth.
I just wanted to hear her voice. I just.
I just want to point out that this is written on this piece of paper, and it was written immediately after you spoke those words.
Oh, you knew the answer?
Yes.
There was no vice president. He tried to pry it out of me, Ken, but I resisted.
No, he wouldn't. Yeah. he wouldn't. Yeah. I showed him.
Don't blame me.
Howard, do you remember the senator who's the one who's responsible for the 25th Amendment, the one who pushed it through?
The senator who pushed it through?
Yep, who battled for it?
No, I don't.
It was Birch Bayh of Indiana.
Ah. Oh, yes, okay.
Ken, I have to ask you about Brexit. I mean, that has been one of the huge stories of the week. And I keep hearing this notion floated that Brexit bodes well for Donald Trump. So I'm wondering if you buy into that theory or not.
Well, look, there's a dissatisfaction. The dissatisfaction we saw in Great Britain is definitely here at home as well. There's just a dissatisfaction. I know that Donald Trump would love for the U.S. to leave North America. I don't think that's going to happen, but no, I'm kidding. But I mean, it's just here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that struck me immediately, that when all in those days and immediately following the vote, when the stock market would fall 600 points, 900 points, people their winnings and earnings were being wiped out. The economies were in big trouble. The relationship between the U.S. and Britain was thought to be some kind of danger. Donald Trump would say, this is great for me, and it's great for my Scotland Golf Club, which is worth now more than ever. And I said, my goodness, this man is talking about how this affects his pocketbook and now how it affects the people. So my immediate reaction was that was just beyond the pale. Of course, I've said beyond the pale and Donald Trump quite often. But at the same time, I see that frustration. I see the fact that jobs are disappearing. They're moving overseas. They're the trade deals are not working. And so
and there's the anti-immigration factor that works into that, too.
You got Bernie Sanders saying in his New York Times op-ed that Trump could benefit from the same forces that led to Brexit.
Yeah. I think possibly, but, you know, it's almost two different, entirely different situations.
But it's the frustration that jumps out.
The frustration,
at me.
The anger, the resentment, and it all came boiling out in Brexit.
And Howard, you're absolutely right. Immigration is a big part of it as well, and that also
is a
feeds
huge
on.
Part of it.
Yeah,
and that's one of obviously, clearly one of Trump's biggest cards to play.
Yeah.
I wonder too, Ken. That you have stories out there, reports out there that many British, heard President Obama saying that Britain would get moved to the back of the line if they left the EU, if they get moved to the back of the line on trade deals. And they didn't take that too well. So I'm wondering if the president's comments may have played a factor as well.
You know, I think it's very interesting how President Britain should vote this way. You've got to do it this way or not that way, but this way. And I just think if foreign leaders came into this country and said, well, you've got to vote Republican or Democratic or you got to vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, I said, please. I mean, we have a lot to do in this country. He has a lot of battles to make sure that the Democrats do well in November with the presidency and the battle for control of Congress. I think telling other people how to vote. I think there was also he told people in Venezuela that they should vote for the recall or they should be allowed to. I mean, I understand he's the head of the free world, but sometimes
there's a rule of thumb that should apply to all American presidents, not just this one. Just stay out of other countries' elections. Let them make their own decisions, but then deal with them.
So you think there's any more fallout coming from Brexit, at least politically speaking?
Well, again, I mean, the most of the articles I've been reading lately, well, one, the stock market seems to have rebounded, and two, now everybody's talking about there are ways that to either delay or even cancel that vote by some mechanism. But again, that almost reminds me of saying that telling the Republican delegates who, by and large, supported Donald Trump for the nomination, gave him the most votes of any Republican in history, gave him the most delegates, the most primary victories, and now there's a group of people who want to unbind these Republican delegates, let them vote their conscience in Cleveland. And if I were a Trump supporter, I mean, I'd say basically, wait a second, you're going to steal the nomination from us as we won all these primaries at the convention? You're going to steal it from us at the convention? So,
yeah.
Boy, there's going to be a lot,
it's a lot to undo. I mean, you can't, once you just can't get the toothpaste back in the tube.
Exactly. The title of my podcast this week is basically will Cleveland become another Chicago? And I mean that as far as anger and anger at the convention. And while I don't think anything will ever top Chicago in 68, I think you could either way, if Donald Trump is nominated or he's denied the nomination, you're going to have a very split and unhappy Republican convention in Cleveland that's going to could last all the way till November.
And then the Never Trump people, the people who are trying to organize, they just keep stalling. Really, I mean, they just don't seem to be making that much progress.
It's wishful thinking.
I think it is, too. Yeah. And plus the fact that you have the Republican National Convention opposed to it as well. They say, look, the last thing we want a united party to defeat Hillary Clinton and look at the 4-4 tie in the Supreme Court. It's, as Al Gore said in 2000, it's the Supreme Court, stupid, and it may be. The election may very well be about the Supreme Court and which way to go. Because if you looked at what the court did this week, boy, I tell you, if Scalia was still there, you'd see a lot of changes.
We were talking about Bernie Sanders a little earlier, too, Ken. I wonder what, he's not officially bowed out. The words haven't come out of his mouth that he's conceding yet. At least I haven't heard him.
He is not.
Where's he headed? What's his role going to be in the whole Democratic convention?
He says he'll vote for Hillary Clinton. He is not ending his campaign. He's still a so-called active candidate. He still has fights regarding the platform, regarding the role of super delegates, regarding whether independents could vote in primaries. What about the federal the issues such as the raise in the minimum wage and trade deals and things like that? So Bernie is not going to go away quietly, and I assume that while Hillary Clinton still will be, of course, the nominee, she does not want to alienate those voters. There's still a double-digit numbers in the polls of Bernie Sanders supporters who say they will not support Hillary Clinton in November, and if it's a close race, which it could be, you don't want to alienate his followers.
Yeah, everything that Ken mentioned that Bernie wants, I mean, he's going to go right up to the edge to get as much of that as he can. And I think, too, one of the things that he wants to do is kind of leave behind a permanent political organization, you know, that's going to try to elect progressive Democrats to all kinds of offices. I mean, he made the speech where he talked to, you know, to his supporters about, hey, go run for, you know, county commissioner, go run for mayor, go run for city council, go run for governor, you know, get involved, be part of the political process. And I think he wants to put something together that is a get out the vote, grassroots type organization, akin to what Barack Obama had.
I was going to say akin to what Howard Dean did after the 2004 election,
exactly.
Who also left a progressive organization right. In his wake.
Yeah, that's an even better analogy. Yeah, sure.
Well, hasn't Bernie Sanders raised quite a bit of money?
$200 million. Yeah. I mean,
so
I mean,
what happens to all that?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has been spent. He spent much more than Hillary. I mean, he spent a fortune apparently in New York and got clobbered by Hillary Clinton in the primary there. It's interesting to talk about the role of money. One, that Donald Trump, as at least at the end of May, has $1 million in his campaign kitty compared to $42 million for Hillary Clinton. The $100 million that Jeb Bush had, and that disappeared almost immediately. And again, all the money that Bernie Sanders raised, and he did raise a lot.
Even
but,
Ben Carson had more money in the bank than he did.
Yeah, Ben Carson. Ben Carson said this week that I think his mother is sick and she may have Alzheimer's, but he said that if she were well, she would take a gun and do something to these dishonest reporters. That's a very Christian way of looking at the freedom of the press, I think. It's amazing. It's unbelievable what is happening. Yeah. I mean, one with having Corey Lewandowski as a commentator on CNN, which is just beyond belief. And two, just not so much. Look, we all know that members, that political figures, Democrats and Republicans, are not big fans of the media. Hillary Clinton has never been a big fan. Obama has put more restrictions on the press than anybody since Nixon. But to talk about, even joke about violence against reporters, which Trump does in almost every rally is just frightening and disheartening.
Yeah, it's just pure ugliness.
But Ken, I have to go back to the idea of fundraising. I keep thinking along the way that this is going to really bite Trump at some point. The fact that he got started so late.
The Republican National Committee, I mean, they are hosting some of these fundraisers around the country for Trump, including the one that they're going to have here next Wednesday at some undisclosed location. I mean, you have to RSVP and basically say you're going to pony up the money, and then they'll tell you where it's going to be. But the RNC is trying to kickstart this fundraising effort for Trump.
Well, that's what's so amazing about the whole thing. Remember, when he was running for the Republican nomination, he said, one, I'm gonna self-fund my campaign. Two, everybody else who's using those super PACs are beholden to those special interests, and I'm not going to be like that because everybody else is a typical politician. Now he's no longer talking about self-funding. He's begging Republican donors to write big checks. And many of them, especially many Mitt Romney supporters in 2012, are holding back. And so I mean, Hillary Clinton has been raising a ton of money from the outset. I think I read somewhere that she has more staff in Ohio than Trump has nationwide.
Yes.
And I don't doubt that.
That's true.
I think it's just and you know, I know it's June and we still have a little over four months to go. But that's not a long time to catch up like that.
Yeah. In the primary season, you know, how much money did Trump need anyway, really? You know,
right. He spent $50 million, but he also had the media access, which was worth billions. Right?
So you think he's still
absolute unlimited access to the media, you know, who would any time of day or night, he could get on the air. He could say anything he wanted to. They would cover everything.
By phone.
You think he's still counting on that?
He may count on that, but this is a general election campaign. This is, you know, like one-on-one. And it matters that you have a whole lot of money in the bank to be able to spend on these 30-second TV commercials and the social media and everything else.
And while I've seen that the media coverage... And while I've seen that the media coverage is still there, the nonstop media coverage is still there, I've seen it more critical more truth-squatting than it was earlier.
It's going to change. It's not going to be the kind, you know, the kind of, oh, look at this.
Fawning.
Yeah, right.
So kind of sort of like the way Mark treats you and me, Howard.
Yeah. Well,
no, that's condescension.
That's kind of nice. It's nice. We enjoy it.
Hey, Ken, is Trump shifting into presidential campaign mode? I mean, it seems like there's an effort underway to get him to clean up his act, and they want a lot of the Republican leaders want to see him spend less time doing these off the cuff speeches. So you're seeing him doing more things off of a teleprompter, trying to make him sound more presidential.
That's exactly. I just saw an interview with Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, and that's exactly what McConnell said. He said, "Look, you got to do the teleprompter. You got to start sounding more presidential." Except my reaction to that is, one, when he reads a teleprompter, it's deadly dull. He just doesn't seem comfortable with it. And two, you know, every time you say, okay, he's becoming more presidential, then one day he'll say something completely outrageous or incendiary, and we're back where we started.
Yeah, and even when he uses the teleprompter, there's still a lot of people who look at it and say, well, you know, you haven't really put the meat on the bone yet. I mean, when you start talking about specific issues.
But he is actually, you know, something, there is something that is changing, and he seems to be working more on this, almost like a Bernie Sanders kind of effort about how these trade deals are destroying the economy and how many middle. And so you see him campaigning in states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, and he's touching a chord. He has a huge lead among I don't know how to put it other than low-educated white voters. He's doing very well among them, but among educated white voters, Hillary Clinton has a huge lead as well.
He was in eastern Ohio the other day in an area that's been chronically economically depressed and suffered horribly from the collapse of the steel industry. And he was railing against NAFTA and other international trade agreements. And I mean the people in that part of Ohio went wild. They loved it. They loved it.
And that is completely anathema to what Republicans believe in. I mean, Republicans are pro-trade, pro-international trade kind of party, and they're watching their nominee undo all the things they stand for. But for better or worse, I'm not saying the Republicans are winning on their views, but these are not Republican,
it's not Republican
talking points.
No, I mean, you wouldn't have heard Mitt Romney or you know, somebody else do that.
We will have more with the political junkie, Ken Rudin, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson after this. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking politics with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk to WVXU at talk@WVXU.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And I want to go back to the whole international trade thing, Ken. You know, that's... Trade is usually not one of those issues that rises to the top in a presidential campaign. Yet here with Trump, it seems like it's become a huge thing. He's even out there battling with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over trade.
Well, it's not only a huge thing with Donald Trump. It was a huge thing with Bernie Sanders, too. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're talking about all the people who have lost their jobs or don't have this economic security that they may have had years ago, it is easy, and sometimes it's correct, to blame it on these trade deals that is making it cheaper to work and produce things overseas. So I think, of course, it's interesting that Donald Trump will blast China and all those countries while he makes his own clothing line and ties and all that in China, which is, but he says, but as president, I won't do that, which is pretty remarkable. But it does touch a chord, as Howard said, in the places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, where people are hurting.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you get to a state like Ohio and you start talking about these trade issues and about outsourcing of jobs and about, you know, That's serious business because a lot of people have suffered economically from it. And you also see, you know, it playing out in the U.S. Senate race here between Rob Portman, the Republican incumbent, and Ted Strickland, the Democratic challenger. You know, the Portman has been in the past a pretty consistent supporter of these international trade agreements. And
he was trade ambassador, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was the trade representative in the Bush administration for a time. Strickland is doing everything he can with his limited resources to just beat him around the head and shoulders about trade and jobs that have been outsourced overseas from Ohio.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation, or you can email us talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Howard, what do you think we should make of all the prominent Republicans who are we're talking earlier about Kasich?
Well,
all the prominent Republicans who say no, I'm not going to have anything to do with the RNC that's coming up in Cleveland.
Well, I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, I've never seen anything like this at all, and I'm sure Ken would say the same thing, that you know, where a substantial portion of your political party rejects you as a presidential candidate, even though the nomination part of it, the delegate part of it's been decided.
Maybe.
Maybe. Kasich is certainly Exhibit A. He has not said a word on Trump's behalf, and basically has said, you know, I'm not sure I can do it. I just can't do it in terms of endorsing him. And what he's doing instead, when he could be helping Donald Trump win Ohio, is he's putting out appeals for money for Republican U.S. Senate candidates like John McCain, Rob Portman. He put one out the other day for Paul Ryan in the House Republican caucus, and he's trying to help, you know, reelect a Republican Congress and basically ignoring Donald Trump.
You know, this comparison is not exact, and there are, of course, many differences. But yeah. In 1964, when Barry Goldwater, it was clear that Barry Goldwater was going to be the Republican nominee for president, and many leading Republicans did not support him. But having said that, Nelson Rockefeller was at the at the convention. He was booed at the convention, but he was there. Yeah. Bill Scranton was there. George Romney was at the convention. So the difference, I mean, of course, it was a different Republican Party back then. Then it was a moderate liberal party taken over by the Goldwater conservatives.
Right. That was when you had liberal Republicans,
Right, exactly. Daddy, what's a liberal Republican? What's a record player?
Exactly. Yeah.
But at the same time, you're right. You don't have George Bush. You don't have George H.W. Bush. You don't have Jeb Bush. You don't have Mitt Romney. You have you have a lot of vulnerable Republican senators like Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire and Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. A lot of them saying, well, either I'm not coming to the convention because I have to campaign for re-election, or because the dog ate my homework. Whatever reason they give, you're going to see a lot of leading Republicans not there. And the scary thing is that the most recognized people at the convention may be Howard and me. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, it is. It is
That's
an awful thing
scary.
To think about. Well, but George W. Bush, I mean, is coming here in early August to hold a fundraising event for Rob Portman. I mean,
exactly.
That's the kind of thing he's doing.
Yep, he's going to spend all the money to make sure the Republicans can keep control of the Senate. Right.
Exactly.
So what does Trump need to do? I mean, unification, fundraising is a big issue for him. It sounds like unification is a big issue for him. What can he do, or can he do anything to pull this party together?
I don't know if it's a big deal for him, because the other day he was asked about the kind of roles that that John Kasich and I forget who else it was, somebody else like that, maybe it was wherever it was, he said, well, you know, or Ted Cruz maybe, he said, well, I'm not, you know, they're not, if they're not endorsing me, I'm not going to let them speak at the convention. And while that sounds harsh, in fairness, if memory serves, Bill Clinton would not let Jerry Brown speak at the 92 convention because Jerry Brown Brown didn't endorse Bill Clinton. So this is not the first presumptive front runner, presumptive nominee who's pulled this kind of tactic. Bill Clinton did it in 92.
Yeah, the only difference being that you know, like in the case of somebody like Kasich, he doesn't seem to want to.
But he's the governor of the home state of the conventions.
I understand.
Remarkable, right?
Yeah. But he just doesn't seem to want any part of it.
Remember the days when we were talking about, well, wouldn't it be something if Governor Kasich became the Republican nominee in the state that he represents? I mean, that'd be pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
How big of a job is it going to be for Mitch McConnell to hang on to the GOP Senate majority with Donald Trump being at the head of the ticket?
That's a great question because, you know, there are 34 Senate seats up this year. 24 of them are currently held by Republicans. Only one Democratic seat seems to be in jeopardy, and that's the seat in Nevada that Harry Reid is leaving. But if you think of this year, you think of Portman, you think of Mark Kirk in Illinois, Pat Toomey in Ohio, Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire, Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, as I mentioned. Suddenly John McCain is very nervous with given the Latino vote in Arizona and the way Hispanics feel about Donald Trump. I mean, and Marco Rubio is no better than even. In his bid to hold on to a seat in Florida, the Democrats only need four seats, assuming they keep the White House. They only need four seats to take control of the Senate, and there are at least four, five, six, seven Republicans who are in some kind of jeopardy in November.
Yeah, and that's why you see basically everybody pulling out stops in the Republican Party, and sending the really big boys like George W. Bush, you know, around the country to help them raise money.
Isn't it funny to think of George W. Bush saving the Republican Party when in 2006 and 2008, Democrats made huge gains taking control of the House and Senate because of George W. Bush's policies?
Yeah, but to a lot of, a lot of Republicans right now, he looks pretty good.
Absolutely.
What did you think of the when the House released the Benghazi report? How damaging do you think that was for Hillary?
Well, you could ask the question, how damaging was it for the Republicans? Because the Democrats from the beginning, of course, have seen it and described it as a witch hunt, hoping to damage Hillary Clinton. But if you listen to Trey Gowdy, the Republican from South Carolina, who's the chairman of the House Benghazi Committee, there was nary a mention of Hillary Clinton. And actually, Obama didn't look so bad either. It was really a critique and a slam at the administration and the intelligence agencies that failed to do what it could or what it should have done to be prepared for some kind of violence in Libya and Benghazi. But Hillary Clinton didn't get a mention. I know a lot of Republicans tried to tie it to Hillary Clinton because she was Secretary of State at the time. Donald Trump tweeted about the fact that this is Hillary's fault. Yeah. But for the most part, this was not about Hillary Clinton and not even Barack Obama. It was just about an inept administration.
Well, it seems like Gowdy and the rest of them, I mean, they just overplayed their hand.
Like a $7 million in several years. And, a lot of people just thought it was a lot of just partisanship for nothing. But speaking of...
Well, yeah, Gowdy's a former prosecutor. He seems like he's still in his prosecutor's role in this whole thing.
Well, I mean, I thought he did. I watched the press conference. I thought it was actually he was bending over backwards, to be fair.
Yeah.
Of course, Democrats they jumped the gun by a day by just ripping Gowdy as a partisan hack. And I could see both sides of it. But just let me just go back to one more point about Donald Trump and tweeting. When this big abortion decision that came from the Supreme Court on Monday, which was one of the biggest abortion decisions in perhaps two plus decades, that basically threw out the Texas restrictions to a woman's right to get an abortion. I mean, you always talk about what side benefits by abortion things. And Hillary Clinton, who has been on the assault, you know, gave a big speech when she was with Elizabeth Warren talking about Donald Trump, the danger of war on women. Trump has yet to respond to that Supreme Court decision. I mean, that's remarkable. Mm-hmm. Of course, he used to be pro-choice. Now he's pro-life. A few months ago, he said that women should be prosecuted in abortion cases. And the pro-life community went ballistic when he said that because they said our argument is not with women. It's with doctors who perform these abortions. But Trump was completely silent. On one of the biggest issues of the campaign. Remarkable, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just doesn't know what to say, to tell the truth.
Ken, getting back to Hillary Clinton, though, how much does the controversy over her email server, how much is that still dogging her?
Well, I mean, personally, I don't think that the answers have been really, they don't square with me. I don't know if anybody cares about it. I really don't. I mean, I don't think, you know, I mean, Chuck Todd did an interview, you know, where he was interviewed, and he said that it's clear to me that Hillary Clinton is hiding things in her emails, and that's why she had a private personal email. And, you know, I mean, there are some people who just don't buy what she's saying, but does it play as an issue? I mean, look, Hillary Clinton's numbers are still negative. She still has the worst favorable ratings of anybody other than Donald Trump. Even the NRA has better ratings than Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. They do in the latest poll. So, look, I think it's a problem. I think there's always been questions about her forthrightness. I have to get a dictionary after the show and her, you know, her
it's ability. A stalker.
right. And but having said that, I mean, she's also running against Donald Trump, where there are so many questions about logic and honesty and truth telling. And so, you know, you wonder if Gary Johnson or somebody else or none of the above. I mean, that would be something. None of the somebody by the name of none of the above running for president has a shot. He may have a shot.
Yeah, so, Ken, at this point, do you think any of the other GOP candidates would be doing any better against Hillary Clinton?
Oh, I do, but I mean, but certainly the Republican voters didn't think so. I mean, I thought Jeb Bush had a better shot. I thought Marco Rubio had a better shot. Polls showed John Kasich with better numbers. But look, it was the Republicans. You know, each party picks its own nominee, and just because some pundits think that somebody might do better in November, you know, I remember in 1980 when all the polls said, well, Howard Baker would do really well against Jimmy Carter, and Ronald Reagan would get clobbered. And of course, be careful what you wish for, because the Democrats love the thought of a right-wing extremist, I'm saying that in quotes, a right-wing extremist like Ronald Reagan getting the nominee and as a nomination, and suddenly he turned it all around and ran a masterful general election campaign. I just don't see Donald Trump being Reagan-esque in any possible way.
Yeah. Yeah, and he ran an excellent campaign, and he just demolished Carter in the debates.
In the one debate, Carter only wanted to do one debate to Carter's regret. Right. And he was also showed he was willing to compromise.
Which was in Cleveland, yeah.
Right, and he picked George H.W. Bush as his running mate, who was a rival, but he said, look, I want to unite the party. I don't see Trump doing that.
Mm-hmm. No.
Ken, what do you make of the private meeting that occurred between Bill Clinton and Attorney General Loretta Lynch?
Yeah, I kind of smiled and my eyebrows went up when I saw that. Apparently, they were in the same city. Coincidentally, Bill Clinton approached Loretta Lynch. Now, of course, there's an FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton. There are questions about emails and all that stuff. And and everybody said, well, do you think Bill Clinton talked about that? And look, both Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton said, we talked about grandchildren and things like that and nothing about, and maybe a little bit about Brexit, but nothing about, you know, cases before the Justice Department. I think that's true. But when I saw the headline, Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch meet, I saw a lot of conspiracy theories starting to get launched.
Well, don't you think just the perception, though, they needed to be careful about that whole thing? I mean, whether it was innocent or not, there's still that perception out there.
Well, what about all the millions of dollars that Clinton and the Clinton Foundation are getting from from foreign governments while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State? There's so many perception questions that drive me nuts about Clinton whether it's an issue or not. Oh, I'm sorry?
Yeah, you don't know where to start. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, so many of them, yeah. But, you know, I mean, Bill Clinton just kind of wanders over to her plane and says, oh, I'm going to see if I was talking to Loretta.
And we talked about golf and grandkids and all kinds of other things. And the case never came up.
And it could have been that kind of an innocent conversation, but perception is often more important than reality.
Yeah, that's right. The old PR saying, that perception oftentimes is reality.
Is reality, yeah.
Well, Ken and Howard, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Speaking of reality.
Yeah. It's been real, Ken.
And we'll be talking to you during the conventions. Thanks very much.
And thank you, Beth, for clearing your voice, because I wanted to hear what she sounded like.
Okay.
Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson.